welcome to my journeys and stories around the old county of Gwent. And we have reached the very west of the Gwent levels, and our seaside time is ended. And the season is shifting too. As I was passing through Peterstone on a little track by the church, I picked the first few juicy blackberries. And there was a young mother and her little daughter clutching a little basket, doing the same thing. And we chatted for a while about how plentiful and how early the berries seem to be this year, and about the fact that there are less things that can go wrong with a crumble than a tart, which are my thoughts exactly. And I carried on down the path then, thinking about the large flat tarts sat on their enamelled plates that my gran used to make, served with ideal milk, evaporated milk, or sometimes custard. So now we have arrived at this edge, the western edge of the levels, the southwestern edge of Gwent, and the edge of summer. The Welsh word for July is Gorffennaf, summer's end. And here at the beginning of August, we're at a summer border. Even though the schools are out and lots of people are only just now starting to think about setting off on their holidays. So I feel that we are at several borders, and also we have arrived at the halfway point of our journeys and stories around the old county of Gwent. Yes, has it gone quickly or slowly? Traditionally, on long journeys, the halfway point is seen as significant as the beginning and the end. So this is an auspicious moment, although true to form, Rambler is nowhere to be seen and, I suspect, has gone on ahead, as she so often does. And so, here at this edge and this halfway point, I am full of August feelings, thinking about what has flourished and what hasn't, what there is to be gathered in this first harvest time. And though I know it's time to turn my back to the sea and start heading on inland, I find I'm stood thinking about stories told and stories not yet told, and how on this warm day, with blackberries in the hedges, I am in this full, ripe, present moment, which is all there ever is. The section of the levels we have been travelling on since leaving the Usk behind us is called the Wentlug Levels, and Wentlug comes from Gwynllug, and Gwynllug takes its name from Gwynllw. What or who was Gwynllw? Well, back in the 5th century, this bit of the South Wales coast, all the way along as far as Neath, was ruled over by a man named Glois. And Glois and his wife Gwawl had vast numbers of children. And when at the end of his life Glois divided his lands up between them, the marshy lands eastwards from the River Rumney, as far as the River Usk, were given to his son Gwynllw, and the land was called Gwynllwg. More than 1,000 years later, another ruler, Henry VIII, in his Act of Union in the 16th century, kept the Rumney River as a boundary for Monmouthshire, with Glamorganshire to the west, and that's pretty much how it stayed, with certain minor changes and fiddling about until today. Now, borders and boundaries can affect people's lives in great and small ways. And in the early 1880s, the Sunday licensing laws had just come into being in Wales. No drinking on Sundays. But Monmouthshire was excluded from this. So on one side of the Rumney, you couldn't drink on a Sunday, and on the other side, you could. And there's a lovely anecdote which Cardiff storyteller Kath Little told me about her great-granddad, who lived in Cardiff and worked as a foreman on a building site. And on Sundays, he would take the horse and cart to the bottom of Rumney Hill, cross over the Rumney River and head on up to the Cross Inn, where he could drink to his heart's content, safe in the knowledge that the horse knew the way home. Kath was born and brought up on the west banks of the Rumney, and as I lingered in my August mood at the edge places, she came and met me for a bit of a cross-border storytelling to mark the shifting of the season. And we wandered along the boardwalks in the warm sunshine at Parc Tredelerch. And then we headed up further into Llanrumney to sit on the shores of the river, which, although low, was very, very chatty. So you can hear the waters of the Rumney bubbling over the stones and making its voice heard in the background. This is your home river, Kath. What can you tell me about it?
This is the first river I ever knew. I can remember coming down and paddling in the water. My school was just on the other side of this bridge, and my house at the top of the hill, the house where I was brought up. And I'm really fond of this river, the Avon Rumney. And it's good to sit here.
I always think how strongly the River Usk features in my own childhood memories. And I'm guessing that this was the same in some ways for you. And I know you've got a beautiful anecdote that really takes me back into the secret imaginative territories of childhood.
Morgan's Tea Gardens.
Yes.
Now, I don't actually remember it. I wish I could go back and retrieve a memory, but the name for me conjures up somewhere enchanting and magical. Over the fields, down the hill, over the Rumney River, through the fields, there was a place called Morgan's Tea Gardens. It's a magical place where, set with tablecloths and porcelain cups and saucers and plates and cakes with waiters. Too dreamy to be real, but it really existed. And when I've asked my mother about it, she said, well, you had to go over the fields, so it was there, but it was just a shop love. But when she talks about it, she smiles, and I think it's the feeling of Morgan's Tea Gardens that I've retained, and then I filled all the gaps with my own imaginings. But a place of enchantment through the fields on the banks of Avon Rumney, Morgan's Tea Gardens.
And since the minute I heard it, I wanted to go there. I think it should definitely exist how it exists in your memory now.
I think it should.
I want to go there this minute. So I know in this podcast I've spoken sometimes about the way rivers collect stories and stories are woven into rivers. And you've got a story that you tell. Is it your favourite story of the Rumney River?
Yes, it is. Sannan was a woodsman. He lived in the forest of Blackwood, Coedion, with his little son. One morning he opened the door, and on the doorstep there was a baby. Naked, a baby girl. No one around, but at the end of the garden there was a dog, and he looked at the dog and the dog looked at him, and he nodded and the dog was gone, and he picked up the baby, called a maidwen and brought her up as his own. Iain and a maidwen grew up as brother and sister in Coedion, and all the woods were their playground. One day they were down by the Rumney River, splashing in the shallows. They'd brought some bits of vegetables to feed to the swans. They were just playing, really, when the old lady came along and asked them if they'd like a piece of cake, because she just made a nice cake. So they said yes, of course, and they followed her to her little house. The cake was delicious and there was tea as well. And after a while, the children, Yian and Maidwen and Yian, said, "We better be going now." The old lady persuaded them to stay, so they did. As the sun was sinking, they saw through the little cottage windows and they heard their father calling them home. "Yian, Maidwen." And they stood up and said, "We really ought to be going now." But the old lady, she stood before the door with a stick in her hand. It wasn't a stick, it was a wand, of course. And she touched them very gently on the head and said, "Splash, Splish, I think you'd be better off as fish." They got smaller and smaller, covered in scales. They had fins and tails. They were fish. They were the salmon children. She scooped them up, put them in the basket, and off she went to the Rumney River. On her way, she met their father, Sanan. "Have you seen my kids? It's not like them to be late." "No," she said. Inside the basket, the children flapped and flipped and said, "Dad, Dad, dunny numma." But their dad couldn't speak fish language. So he went on searching for them. The old lady, she went down to Avon Rumney and she threw them in. "Splash, Splish," she said, "you'd be much happier as fish." But what were the children to do? Only thing they could do, swim. They swam, those magic salmon children swam, and they were salmon. They could leap high and dive deep. They had fun swimming down the River Rumney, through the Blackwood Coedion, past fields and little villages, all the way down to Môr Hafren, the Seven Sea. When they got there, they thought it might be fun to go deep, deep down. So down they went, down, 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 till they came to the other world, the land of the Myr. And there they heard the mermaids singing. And they heard the mermaid stories and shared their own. And when the Myr people heard of the woods and the trees and the sky and the sun and the birds, they said, "You're making it up. Nowhere could be as magical as that." The children said, it's true, there is such a place. And then they knew that they were homesick and they longed to be home again. So up, up, up they went. And because they were salmon children, they found Avon Rumney again. And they swam all the way up the river until they came to Coedion, the Blackwood. Well, that was when they got caught in a fishing net. The fishing net did not belong to a human fisherman, belonged to one of the Bendith and Mamai, the Tylwyth Teg. The fairies. The fairy fisherman looked at the fish and said, "You're no ordinary fish, I can tell. I think you are under a spell. I'll take you to the fairy queen, she'll know just what to do." So he did. And the fairy queen, Briallen, lives behind the waterfall on the Rumney River at a place called Pwllhebel. And the fairy queen, Briallen, with her hair crowned with flowers, looked at the children and said, "You're no ordinary fish, I can tell. I know you are under a spell." She asked for a crystal vase to be brought filled with river water, and the children swam around happily while she began to sing her own spell. And as she sang, primroses grew in the woods in Coedion, because she was Briallen, queen of the primroses. The primroses grew in a little path, and the path led all the way home. And their dad, Sanan, searching for them, not finding, not giving up either, opened the door on that morning, saw the primroses, and he knew. He followed the primrose path all the way down to the River Rumney, where the queen was waiting, and she said, "Dewch yma." And he followed her behind the waterfall through to the other world, and there he saw two fish leaping and jumping and somersaulting out of a crystal vase, and they were saying, "Dad, Dad, Dunin Amma." He couldn't speak fish language, of course, but the fairy queen could, and she touched them very gently, and as they twirled and whirled, they began to transform back into themselves again, and they landed on the floor, boy and girl and boy, Yian and Maidwen. And their dad squeezed them tight, so tight, so tight, and he cried tears of joy. And he said, "Kids, let's go home." And they said, "Dad, we went down And we went down to the other world. He said, tell me all about it at home. But then they said, Dad, what about the old lady? Betha mar hen raig. Leave it to me, said the queen of the fairies. And the children went home with their dad, and the queen of the fairies, she went walking along the banks of the river Rumney, and she found the old lady. And the old lady sat on the banks, her tears falling splash, splish, into the river waters. And the fairy queen, she spoke gently and said, the children, they're back again safe, but as for you, my dear, do you fancy a change? I do, said the old lady. I do indeed. So the fairy queen touched her very gently, and her white hair turned green. And her hands, her fingers grew long and spindly. And her toes, they found their way through the deep, dark earth. And her back grew harder and stronger and tougher and rounder. The fairy queen turned the old woman into a tree. Coeden helig, a willow tree. A weeping willow tree. And that was the first willow tree that grew on the banks of the Rumney River.
When Kath had finished telling the story of the salmon children, we talked for a while about how that story, amongst other things, is a reminder of how salmon belong to the whole river. High up inland, where they spawn, but also far out at sea. The whole of the river and the sea is their familiar home. They belong to all of it. I like how the story brings that reminder in what for Kath is a familiar river, her home river. And so, far from being a border or a boundary, the river in this story is shown in a different way. The Rumney River in this story is a highway between worlds and a vital route from home to home.
The old lady, she has given them a gift. What a gift to know the river as a fish and to know the sea and to be in it and to know, to be completely part of it. That's a gift, isn't it? I think with our stories and our songs, we can bring people into honouring the rivers, looking after the rivers, to deepen an emotional connection that we might have forgotten or lost sight of. As children, we might love rivers, but maybe as we grow, we lose that emotional connection. And there's a grey group called the Cardiff Rivers Group who work on looking after the Rumney, the Taff and the Ely. I think one of the pushes for action is love, really. If we love the rivers and feel close to them, we're more likely to want to look after them and care for them. In our heads, we know we depend on the rivers and we know they're in trouble. But when our hearts are engaged, we're more likely to do something about it, I think.
The city of Cardiff and the Gwent Levels do seem worlds apart, but they are linked landscapes. When the flatlands east of the Rumney were flooded, famously, in 1607 by a tsunami or super high tide, Cardiff was flooded too. And I wondered whether the Levels landscape beyond the river had felt familiar to Kath as a child.
They were. My mother and father would always go for a drink on a Saturday night. And sometimes in the summer months, we'd drive out down Wentlook Road and out into the countryside, onto the Levels, and we'd go to the little village of Peterston, and there was this lovely old pub called the Six Bells. And at that time, children weren't allowed inside, so my mother and father would go inside, and we'd sit on a bench in the garden, and Dad would always ask what we wanted, but he'd always, no matter what we said, he'd bring us out plain crisps and a bottle of pop. So we'd get our plain crisps and we'd sit in the garden and eat them. And I remember on more than one occasion us going for a wander in the village and Dad taking us to the church, St Peter's, and showing us the mark on the wall and telling us this was where the waters came in the flood of 1607. And it didn't really make a lot of sense to me, but what I do remember was his fascination that the mark that was made was from that time on. And here we were standing there looking and touching the same wall that was touched then, that the waters touched, that afterwards to remember that the stonemason had marked on the wall. And it really stayed with me, that memory.
And now, all these years later, you're, amongst the many other things you're doing, you're researching a volume of Cardiff folk tales for the History Press, which I think is due to be published next year. So have you found yourself researching the flood? Has that been part of your research?
I have been researching, but what I'm looking for is stories, and there are tantalising glimpses of stories. Apparently there were ballads written about the flood that are lost. But there are little scraps of stories, and I know one of the most moving, you wrote about in Gwent Folk Tales of the mother who put her little girl on a beam with a chicken to keep her warm so that she'd survive the waters when the waters rose. And I found that in the historical records. And also, I know that the church on St Mary Street, there was once the Church of St Mary, and I know that was flooded. Also, I read about St Augustine's. I know the lovely old church in Rumney, and apparently there was, when they couldn't identify the body, so many people lost their lives. There was a mass grave just near St Augustine's. There were also descriptions of the waves. They were like a mountain. It was a mountain of water. And so fast that not even the quickest greyhound could have outrun the waters.
Kath and I sat talking by the river until we remembered that we were hungry and thirsty, but we decided not to follow in Kath's great-granddad's footsteps and head to the Cross Inn. Instead, we headed on up to the village of Llaneder, which is tucked in along the bank of the Rumney, but on the Cardiff side. And there, in the heart of the old village, alongside the little church, there is an old pub, left empty for a long time, but now brought back to life. And it's called the Unicorn Inn. There was still no sign of Rambler, but I think she passed this way. She has set the coast behind her now, to carry further on along the banks of the Rumney into the second half of the journey, and whatever lies ahead. And so will I. So for now, I'll say thank you for keeping me company in my journeys and my stories, and I'll see you again on down the track.